Stay tuned for a special edition of the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast.
I think she had a loose understanding of what the law actually was, Dave. Everyone who had an interaction with her the entire time was like, wow, she's special and just something else, you know, I mean, but it's not in a good way. you know, I think I'm going to have my attorney count up the number of hours he spent on the phone with her. And because basically those dollars amounted to no progress whatsoever. It was just, he's like, I think my IQ is lower now having spent that time on the phone. But the sad thing about it was, you know, she was very, she was a loose cannon, right? And she would just poke at things. And it was one of those people who they had to be in control, right? She had to be in control or feel like she was in control. And so this entire acquisition, Dave, was a lesson in leverage, because in the beginning we were really at risk and they tried to sabotage the transaction because their buyer didn't win. Right. Oh, wow. So they, like, to the tune of tried to make us lose our earnest money a couple of times and walk away.
Welcome to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where we dissect a deal before your eyes and ears so you can discover the strategies and tactics that got each deal to the finish line. Strategies and tactics that you can put in your own toolbox to get you to the closing table. From sourcing the deal, raising, due diligence to the property takeover, Multifamily Deal Lab shows how you too can get the deal done. And now here's your host, David Lindahl.
I want to welcome Chad and Maurice to the podcast. So Chad, first I'll start with you. Why don't you tell everybody who you are, where you're from, how many deals you've done already? Because neither of these two guys are beginners.
Absolutely, Dave. Thanks for having us back on. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, you were the guy that started it for us all. So happy to be giving back to the audience here and to everyone of our peers. So my name is Chad Sutton. I am the managing partner over acquisitions here at Quattro Capital. Basically, y'all, I am a recovering corporate guy, right? I was in corporate America for a long time. I learned over time that, you know, wow, this job security I thought I had, right? It's only about 2 weeks away from being torn apart, right? As I watch people get laid off when times were tough and things of that sort. And, you know, as a father of about to be two any day now, as a father of two, a husband, you know, I just decided I wanted more for my life and for my family. And, you know, started pursuing real estate, I guess about 3 years ago at this point, and never looked back. This mindset stuff Dave is talking about is real. Take it to heart, because when you start getting those vibrations in tune, man, stuff starts to happen.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what number deal is this?
Oh, good Lord. 15, maybe something like that.
And also you also have your own podcast as well. I want to plug that. Tell everybody where they can hear you.
Yes, absolutely. So wherever you get your podcast, you can look for the Real Estate Runway. That's Real Estate Runway. It is powered by Quattro Capital. I am the host. So you can Google or search for Chad Sutton or the terms Real Estate Runway on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for that, Dave.
Wherever good podcasts are sold. I'm sorry. What number deal was this, Chad?
I believe it's deal number 15-ish.
Number 15. It, 3 years and 15 deals. Pretty sweet. Yeah. All right, Maurice, let's hear your story.
Dave, it's good to see you, man.
You too.
So my story, since we're on the RE Mentor podcast here, I started there from the multifamily perspective, converted over from single family back in 2015 because I just wasn't growing. I got to a pretty large portfolio, knew that multifamily was the next step, and then found you guys, hit up a Multifamily Millions bootcamp, and then here I am. So I am born in New York, raised in Boston, live in Washington, D.C., based here, but I'm also based in the Mediterranean now. That is official as of this summer. I'm doing real estate over there as well. I am a senior executive at a global consulting firm of 25 years, a retired lieutenant colonel and federal agent, still a police officer, but I'm retiring now. But more importantly, I spend my time with Quattro Capital investors and my partners, Chad, Aaron, Kim, and Tammy, on helping people achieve whatever goals it is they want to use real estate to achieve. I am big, big, big on financial freedom, time freedom, and freedom principles, and real estate is the power to that. So that's why I love to give back. Happy to be on your platform to give people a little bit of motivation. 100% with you on the mindset comments.
Awesome. And what number deal is this for you?
I'm somewhere in the mid-20s-ish. I had a few deals before I started with Chad and crew, And then prior to that, I don't know. I mean, hundreds of single family transactions prior to that.
So let me see. Born in New York, moved to Boston, then moved away. I got to ask you, are you a Yankees fan or Red Sox fan?
Oh, Red Sox fan. Boston's home. Everything is New England sports. If they're not playing, then I'm okay with DC, but it's all New England.
All right. Awesome. Then you can stay. All right. So let's talk about this deal. So the interesting thing about this deal was the fact that it was ordered by a judge. Tell that story.
Yeah, I guess I'll jump in on that one. I lived that for about 7 months. So interesting and sad story, right? Sometimes when family and business is mixed, it can go south. This was a situation where about 40 years ago, a married couple acquired an asset. They moved from California, bought an asset, live in Chattanooga, and they had a couple of children together. Well, they split, right? And I believe the father married a new woman and had a whole nother family. The mother and estranged kids went back home. So there's a lot of that family drama, right? Well, mom passes away about 18 months ago, and the children realize that the trust has not been really, we'll say, receiving distributions for quite some time, right? Not in the way it should be. So they open a lawsuit that creates a situation where effectively, after about 12 months of legal battle, the judge forces a sale of the property. Said, we're just going to liquidate. We're going to be done. Fortunately, and it's all who you know, right? This was not a marketed deal. This was a situation where the party A brought a broker to the table and party B brought a broker to the table. And they all solicited about two or three buyers. We were one of those buyers. And we were brought in under that premise. We really, it's almost like a foreclosure. We didn't really get to go tour the property, didn't get to go look too much into it. We were able to use the resources available to us, like, you know, drive by, word of mouth in the area, Google reviews, Google Maps, Google Earth, anything, you know, any history we could get on the property. And we kind of had to offer blind that way, right? Wow. We were finally able to get some financials, put an offer in at more money than we wanted to pay for it, sadly. And we got a notification from the court order, actually, that we were awarded the deal. Now, this was almost 7 months after being engaged for the first time. So it was a very slow process, a lot of distrust and anger involved in all parties. And that was only the beginning.
Wow. So you had, so the due diligence process was difficult. It's almost like it was an auction, like I think you said.
Yes.
And so just let me run the numbers on this deal for everybody so they know what we're talking about. So it's 128 units, and it's in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It was built in 1980. Purchase price was 8.2. The raise was 2.8. So Maurice, what type of surprises were there during the due diligence process if you're going in quasi-blind?
Well, it's not so much surprises. And Chad kind of ran due diligence with Tammy on the ground and with our partner, Brandon. Kind of where I didn't have any surprises from my perspective, because where I came into play on the deal was the investor relations side and raising while Chad was doing tip of the spear on the ground. But Chad, I don't think there was any major hiccups from it, from what I can recall.
No, honestly, you know, Dave and Mo, this was, and you'll remember this well, Mo, this was a very clean deal. They had really taken pride in this. This was their baby that, you know, they lived, worked, and played right around that area. You know, I think the biggest surprise we had was the number of attorneys we had to deal with to get anything done throughout the process. I believe there were 7 involved, and it was a constant negotiation day in and day out for anything.
Was that because there were 7 different family members?
No. There were, so there were 2 sides. You know, we had there were 2 attorneys involved with one side, 2 involved with another because of the out of state and having to have a licensed representative in the state where the court is. We then had to hire a litigator, and we had a couple, you know, another attorney that was involved who was actually representing another buyer unbeknownst to me. So we had to move him to the side, go bring our other litigator in just because it wound up being a due process type of thing. We had to, if we wanted a rent roll, we had to send a chain of email. It's like I get to see the dollar signs going up, Dave. Mm-hmm. I sent an email to my attorney. He would send it to the other attorneys with make a 2-line email about that long. And then they would send it to the other 2 attorneys, and they would send it to the kids. And then the response would go back the same way. So it was like you could just see the dollar signs racking up for every email sent. So that was quite interesting.
One of the attorneys, you called her loony. Do you want to explain that?
Yes. If I don't ever run into this woman again, it will be too soon. So there was an attorney.
By the way, have you ever seen the scene in Stand By Me where the kids are being chased by the dog? They jump over the fence and at this junkyard. They're being chased by a junkyard dog. They jump over the fence and then, you know, the junkyard owner, you know, he's on the other side of the fence. He says, "You kids come back here. You come back here." And then one of the kids gives him a hard time and he says, "I know who you are. You're that LaChance kid. Your father burned your hair in a frying pan. He was loony, 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 loony." Was this woman like that?
She's probably in that ballpark. Yeah. So this was the attorney that I think was the reason everything went the way that it did. But I think she had a loose understanding of what the law actually was, Dave. Everyone who had an interaction with her the entire time was like, "Wow, she's special and just something else," you know. I mean, but it's not in a good way. you know, I'm going to have my attorney count up the number of hours he spent on the phone with her, and because basically those dollars amounted to no progress whatsoever. It was just, he's like, "I think my IQ is lower now having spent that time on the phone." But the sad thing about it was, you know, she was very, she was a loose cannon, right? And she would just poke at things. And it was one of those people who they had to be in control, right? She had to be in control or feel like she was in control. And so this entire acquisition, Dave, was a lesson in leverage, because in the beginning we were really at risk and they tried to sabotage the transaction because their buyer didn't win. Right. Oh, wow. So they, like, to the tune of tried to make us lose our earnest money a couple of times and walk away. And so it was literally a battle of shifting leverage from this side all the way over to this side. And eventually we quit taking her calls. It was like, she can't do anything anyway. And if they tried to blow the deal up, all we got to do is drag her by the shirt collar back in front of the judge and show them the fact that we have money in the bank ready to close. So she earned herself the nickname Loony because nothing she ever said made any sense. None of it had any economic, moral, or any kind of background or grounds that you could start to even rationalize as a sensible thought, right? But yet people had to listen to this woman because, you know, she was a council member and she just, you know, for example, we had an earnest money, not earnest money, a contract extension where we basically just had to let the contract go dead and just say, "We're walking away," you know, and just, we let it sit for 2 weeks quietly. And it was over a $200,000 roof credit, you know, so that was probably one surprise. We didn't think the roof was bad, but it was one of those things where when you're negotiating, you just kind of have to sit there and respect the silence and just know that, look, like it's painful to respect the silence and it's scary and we have money at risk on it, but you know we're going to win because she doesn't have any leverage, you know. So that's the kind of person we were dealing with for the last 7 months in this transaction.
Wow, that's crazy. Maurice, you had mentioned that you were doing most of the raise, so how did that come about? 2.8 million.
This one was 2.5 million, I think. I think the first thing to mention is that 25% of the people who are in the deal are repeat customers of Quattro. That's a big deal. That's really important to us. We don't treat our people like a transaction. We treat them like, give them the care that they deserve, given that they spend a lot of time, you know, creating that money that they're able to invest in the deal. But there was a variety of different things. It was everything from self-directed IRAs to multi-person LLCs that came in, to one of the people that came in was, for example, a personal friend of mine who did a cash out refi on their home because they knew that, you know, money sitting inside of their home is doing absolutely nothing, where they could come out, get a 10% preferred on a Class A1 or do something different on a Class A2 and go for broader wealth in the long term. So that is the part that I love, spending time with each individual investor, figuring out what their goals are and if this particular deal made sense to everybody. And it didn't make sense to everybody. It didn't make sense for everybody, but the people that it did make sense for, walk them through the process, help them understand the financial aspects of it, make sure it meets their goals, walk them through the paper, getting advice, but making sure they, you know, spend time with their CPAs and attorneys. But the raise, I just checked now our database, the raise took us roughly 6 weeks, maybe a little bit less, to be honest, actually a little bit less because we were done for closing. So it was about a 4 or 5 week raise, and it went pretty smoothly. This is one of the best ones we've ever had, actually.
So if you raise 25% from repeat investors, where'd the other 75% come from? What was your strategy? Where did you meet these people?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have an ongoing strategy in relation to social media, in relation to all the managing members of Quattro being exposed. And it exposes is a bad word, but we try to get out there to show people the benefits of real estate. And if you've ever heard me speak, some of the people who are probably on this Facebook Live have heard me speak in different places. Real estate is not necessarily just about money. It's what that money can do for you. So part of, you know, kind of the talking campaign, I'm on a Zoom call tomorrow night with probably about 80 people. There are people, for example, trying to get out of the W-2 world. I've done it. Or Chad has done it. I can do it at any time. There are people trying to leverage passive income today. And then also, Dave, there are people who don't necessarily want the cash flow right now because they're putting money into their self-directed 401s and they want that money to grow on the back end. So everything from social media to attending in-person events, Zoom calls, lots of friends. And, you know, I will say that I tended to be a very private person when it came to real estate before. I think that's a bit short-sighted and selfish, to be honest, because what real estate can do to improve people's lives, if you're not aware of it, you're missing an opportunity. So the more we can put ourselves out there, the more, you know, we can capture people who are interested in this stuff and then lead them to the right place if it makes sense for them. Because many people I turn away and say this is not for them because it's an illiquid investment and they got to be willing to go with the full time period.
Yeah, you're so right on that. You know, I've always, when I used to go out there and pitch the apartment house, Rich's either home study system or that 3 day, I remember one of my mentors told me, you know, he said, does the product work? I said, oh, yeah, it works. He said, then you've got to get on that stage and do everything you can to get somebody to buy. You got to push them. I'm like, I'm not really a pushy person. No, you got to push them because this is their opportunity to change their lives. And if they don't see it, you've got to have them see it. And it's true.
Exactly right.
Real estate, it's not for everybody, but I mean, it changes lives. I mean, change everybody that's on here right now. I was a broke landscaper when I first started, you know. So that's the beauty of real estate investing. And you can do it from both sides. You can be a real estate operator like us, or you can be a real estate investor. Either way, you know, you partake and you make money. You make more money than typically you would make in your W-2.
That's right. And I'll just add one more thing. It really important for people to understand what the real estate is going to do for them. It is not what their money is going to do for the deal. It's what the deal is going to do for them. And it can really have a dramatic impact. One person who invested on our deal, she has a path now. She wants to do 6 passive investing deals because we've kind of articulated and figured out what kind of cash flow that's going to stem for her. And that's going to help her get to her next thing that she wants to do in life. So, you know, it makes sense for her to be doing these deals. So we articulate like that, worry about people's goals. They come first. And then, you know, we don't have too difficult of a time raising because we're doing it the right way.
Mm-hmm. So when you say social media, Chad has his own podcast. You do some speaking. Did you go on those different summit events that a lot of people are having? Is that what you mean by speaking? So you get invited onto those. How did you get invited onto one of those in the first place? Like, give somebody some insight. If they were looking for a way to use social media to increase their ability to raise funds or expose themselves in their company, give like 2 or 3 tips.
Well, I don't raise money by social media. What I do is just bring awareness to what real estate can do for people and for whatever their goals are. Mm-hmm. And if they are accredited or non-accredited, depending on where they are, then we have to educate them on certain things and then we can talk with them legally. But the thing about social media, it's like a drip process. The more you put information out there, the more it starts seeping into people, the art of the positive information, because social media can be very negative too. Mm-hmm. But the more you put positive information out there, and I use myself as an example, I'm the best example I can give because I know what it's done for my life. I have started to expose what it has done for me from a personal perspective, how having a growth mindset connected me with people like Chad and my other 3 partners, and now Quattro has, you know, done tens of millions and it'll be hundreds of millions of real estate fairly soon. You know, it's if people are interested in getting information out to people, it is not about, to me, it is not about deals. We have deals. No, It is, what can real estate or any passive investment, especially passive income or long-term wealth generation, do to improve your life while you're on this beautiful planet? And that's the type of stuff that really resonates with people. So I like to see social use in that vein. I tend to shy away from the people who are just, I got a deal. Well, good for you. So, you know, so doesn't the rest of the world, but what does that deal mean for me?
How about you, Chad? Give some social media tips.
Yeah. I'd love to add to that. And you know, if you go to our website, thequattroway.com, and click on our little podcast link, you're going to see that our podcast is young, Dave. We just launched it. You know, we've been thinking about it for a long time, but you go look on podcast appearances. We've appeared on everyone's podcast, right? And you know how we did that? We didn't wait for someone to ask us. We listened to one we liked and said, you know, we reached out and we figured out, how do we get in touch with that person? We said, you know, hey, me, Mo, Aaron, whoever, we've done X, Y, Z, you know, really think we can add value to your listeners in this way. And that's all podcasters are looking for, is people who can come on and add value to their listeners, because it's work to create content, right? So you're doing them a favor by offering to come and add credibility to their show, you know, and share what you know. Just ask, right? When you start trying, and man, I'm telling you, you talk about a credibility leap, you know, posting stuff on social media is awesome. And you have to do that, right? To really show, you know, what you're about and what your life goals are and how things have changed you, what you're learning. But man, when you start showing up on people's shows, and not just one, but a lot of them, right? Mm-hmm. And you start being, you know, then you start becoming, you know, people to start coming to you. Your LinkedIn profile will have people coming to you saying, hey, I've got this show and I'd love for you to come and speak on it. Or I've got this event, I'd love for you to be a speaker on it. And it just snowballs, my friends. It just snowballs. So just ask. And, you know, like Dave said, you want to be on a show and be out there on social media, put that vibe out there, right? Put that vibe out there with show, you know, people who are podcasters, and it'll come very quickly.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so let's start wrap up this particular deal. Anything unusual about the takeover of the deal?
Let's see, the takeover. Yeah, I think so. So one thing we found out,
this was a rehab as well.
So yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So this is, it's a 1980s build, y'all. Concrete steel reinforced structure, flat roof, but we got a credit for it. Okay. This thing is in today's market, I signed up Berkshire Hathaway to do the insurance for $160 a door with a very good policy.
Wow.
Because they've had it since it was built. There've been two fires in the thing in 40 or 50 years, right? However long ago 1980 is, 40 years. And the damage off those fires was like $5,000 each. Why? Because it's a concrete box. It doesn't burn, right? And if that thing were to fall over, Chattanooga's gone, right? So it was a very easy building from that perspective, which is, and that's the wonderful thing. The same ownership, mom and pop style, have had it for 40 years. Chattanooga has exploded, mm-hmm. right? So from a loss to lease perspective, yeah, we got to go spend some money on the things that count, you know, the actual unit interiors. But we don't have to really spend money on deferred maintenance. They have maintained the building for what it is very, very well. And actually, that leads to, here's our biggest surprise. When we got into these units, Dave, and I've never seen this before. I wish I had a picture and I could show you. So envision in your minds, on the bottom, there's a dishwasher. Above that, there's a cooktop. And above that, there's an oven. Envision that setup. When you first look at it, you're like, oh, yeah, that's a microwave and a stovetop and an oven. Like, no, look again. They had this, I don't know what this appliance was. It was from like the 80s, but it was like it's this set-in unit that sits on top of the countertop, has a cooktop, and then it's got some metal on the back of it. And above it looks like a massive microwave. It's an oven. The door opens like a microwave, but that's the true, like, you know, 240-volt oven. Yeah. And so... once we rationalize, like, okay, these have got to go because these can't be safe anymore, you know? So that was a big, you know, experience. But if that tells you anything, you know, that justifies the $200+, you know, loss to lease that's going to be burned off over the next year or two. So yeah, just very, very textbook value add, Dave.
That's a nice upside. How much per unit are you putting in?
We are going to be putting in about 9,000 a unit, I think, blended. So it'll be a little involved. I mean, we're basically taking it down. We're actually going to have to reconfigure half the units to make the kitchen work. So there'll be a bit of an expense there.
And what's so have you figured out what the, I'm sure you have, what the value of the property is going to be when you have that the 200 burns off?
Well, I'm just going to give you an anecdote right now. So we bought that property around 61,000 a door. You can't buy anything in Chattanooga for less than 80 a door, even deep value adds. And there are two properties that are built 1970s builds that are not a mile away from this property. And now they've been rehabbed, right? But they are currently under contract for 150,000 a door and 155,000 a door. So we haven't quite assumed that high because of our, you know, these are studios and one bedrooms. So they'll probably figure the NOI is lower. Maybe if it's even 130, we underwrote selling this thing at 100 a door. So if any of those things come true, we are happy campers, you know.
And how much, so at 9K a door, how much is that? 1.2 million in the rehab?
That sounds about right.
All right. So you're in for the rehab 1.2.
Exterior too. I think it's about 1.5 million on the total rehab.
So you're in for a total of 9.5 on the low side. If you sell for 130, it's a 16.6. So it could be a $7 million payday.
Could be. And it's a good one too. I mean, we're pretty excited about this one. You know, that was leading me to one other, where are we going with that? The proximity to downtown Chattanooga is the biggest part we love about it. You know, it's not 4 miles from the city center, and envision taking a nice brick building, putting like a matte gray or some kind of contemporary painted look on it, controlled access doors. Like, we're going to vibe this place out. Like, this is going to be Chattanooga's youth wants to live here, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited. I mean, the papers are writing about it. I'm pretty excited about what we're going to do.
That's awesome. Good press is awesome. Maurice, one last question before we go into lightning round. So, you know, you get this deal that has a potential huge payday on the back end. How are you presenting it to the investors? Are you presenting that huge payday? Are you being conservative? How are you doing it?
Well, whenever we talk to anyone who might be interested in real estate, we tend to underpromise and overdeliver. That's kind of our mantra with what we want to do. And it really depends on, for this particular deal, we had, you know, tiered class returns. Some people have the value of the cash flow. Some people have the value of the big payday on the back end. This particular deal could accomplish both. So it's what can the deal do for that particular person's goal? And I mentioned to you, there's one person who's in there who's 70 plus, and she's just wants cash flow. So preferred cash flow. It is, you know, extremely stable. And given that we got it at 62 a door, and Chad already articulated, there's probably a lot of built up equity in there. She has much more confidence. There is much more confidence that we'll be able to pay her preferred. So my talk track, if you will, is based on what the property can do for that person's particular goal.
And did you say three tiers for this deal?
Yes. No, not three investment classes, but three tier hurdle structure.
Could you just briefly go over those, and then I'll go into lightning round just for the benefit of those listening.
Yeah, sure. So we to kind of optimize for what the deal can do for the investor, right? We've come up with a structure that we like where it's, you have one class that's really like mainly preferred return cash flow, and one class that's like, you know, a little cash flow and upside. And we like to, so the problem with just putting a straight equity split on something, that's great when you find a really good deal, but it doesn't encourage you to write a conservative pro forma. We want to make sure we're writing something that we know we can achieve, you know, and maybe take a little risk on it, but you don't want to be promising the house just to hit a, you know, just to be able to keep 30% of the deal or whatever it is. So we set it up to where it's biased. The equity split is biased towards our investors until we hit, let's say, a 10 IRR or something. And then after we hit a 10 and before we hit a 15 or whatever number you choose, it goes to kind of a 50-50, and then it flips the other way. So it's like, you know, most of our upside comes when we underpromise and overdeliver. It's a pretty simple concept.
Good way to put it. All right, we're going to go into lightning round right now. And what I'm going to do in lightning round is I ask you a series of questions. This is meant to be fun. And then you just give the answer that comes to the top of your mind.
Is this a race? Mo, I'm going to win, dude.
No, we'll take both. Whoever answers first is fine. All right. So what time of day do you get up?
Go for it, Mo.
I'm the 4 a.m. guy.
I used to be 4:30. Lately, it's been 6:30. So I'm slacking.
What happened?
Kids happen.
Oh, yeah. I hear that. I know that. My problem is I've got one kid that wakes up at 5:30. So, you know, if I want to get some meditations and workout and stuff in and be by myself, yeah, I have to get up at 4 in order to do that, because she's up anywhere between 5 and 6.
Yeah, I got bad vibes on that. So I need you guys to send me some good vibrations. Get back.
All right. There you go.
Peanut butter and jelly or peanut butter and marshmallow? What's your favorite?
Ooh, PB&J.
PB&J.
All right. Do you consider yourself hip? Do you consider yourself hip?
No.
Hip. I don't even know. Is that a word anymore? Hip?
Hip. Yeah.
And I went through my closet this weekend and all my stuff is old. So I think I'm officially not young anymore.
But, okay. Bitcoin, are you a believer?
I don't know yet.
Cautiously.
Cautiously. What was the last concert you went to?
It was like 18 months ago, pre-pandemic. I think mine was Luke Bryan. It was a local country artist here in Nashville. Well, he's big now, but you know.
Yeah.
I can see the guy in my head, but I can't remember his name. It's a long time ago. I just can't remember his name.
All right. What's your favorite dessert?
Jenny's ice cream, local Nashville shop here. Brambleberry crisp.
What flavor do you get?
Brambleberry crisp. That's the stuff.
Chris, interesting. Mo, what's your favorite dessert?
Bourbon.
Got me.
I got a question. Can you daydream at night?
Can yes. I what?
Yes. All right. Would you rather be in LA or New York?
New York.
Sour Patch Kids or Swedish Fish?
Neither.
Neither?
Neither. Not neither? A candy, yeah.
What's the last thing you do every night?
Last thing I do every night, probably hug my wife.
Yeah, brush my teeth. I don't know. Go to sleep.
Close your eyes. All right.
And finally, the last question is, would you buy a coffin with a lifetime guarantee?
What? What?
Would you buy a coffin with a lifetime guarantee?
No, I don't care after I'm dead.
Yeah. Once I'm gone, I'm gone. I'm good.
All right. That has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. We'll see you on the next episode. Thank you, Chad. Thank you, Maurice.
Yep. You got it, man.
All right. So you guys hang out, Jermaine.
Coffin with a lifetime.
Yeah, you like that one? The last question is always a very unusual question when I do this.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Jermaine, what do we have for, I got two questions. I want to ask you guys each a question, because I want to use that as a little clip.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, since you started investing in multifamily properties, how has your life changed? So I'm going to do Chad first. Chad Sutton, since you started investing in multifamily properties, how has your life changed?
Night and day, Dave. I have left a big corporate W-2 job. I have started a private equity firm with a boutique private equity firm with my friends, one of whom is on this call. And we are, for the first time in my life, Dave, when I win, everyone wins. In my previous life, when I won, someone else had to lose and I was good at it, you know, but it was a moral problem. Now when I win, everyone wins.
And what are the things you're doing now personally that you weren't doing before?
Well, with the exception of the last 2 weeks, I'm a miracle morning guy. I get up early. I get more done by 9 a.m. than most people do all day. You know, my physical fitness, my morning time with my daughter, you know, when I get up out of bed at 4:30, my morning meditation, whatever happens there. So, man, I'm telling you, when you start the day, even if you start the day an hour later, 9 a.m., you've accomplished more mindset, physical fitness, and mental toughness and family time before most people open their eyes. You know, so that's it.
All right. So I'm now going to go to Maurice. Maurice Philogen, since you started investing in multifamily properties, how has your life changed?
People have been the game changer. So multifamily has connected me to people who need to achieve goals. I like helping people. Multifamily has connected me to my amazing partners, Chad being one of them, Aaron, Kim, Tammy. And then we also have alliance partners who we have sponsored in deals, Dave. So I have... Multifamily has allowed me to impact people's lives in a very, very significant way. And that's really important to me.
And how about fun-wise? I hear you travel a lot.
I do. Yeah, I do travel quite a bit. Yeah.
So where do you like to go?
I was always traveling my whole life. But right now, so this is a good story. I mean, right now, I spend most of my time in the Mediterranean region. Part of that is because I teamed up with somebody else. It's more lifestyle related, but I'm now buying land over in Cyprus and developing it into apartments and townhomes right on the Mediterranean coast. And that came from partially confidence built, executing on multifamily, but more so when I started working and building up Quattro Capital with Chad and our partners, I know that I can get that stuff done over there. I just have to learn the local laws, and that's why you have another partner. Again, back to people. Multifamily has brought me to a lot of people, and that has changed kind of the trajectory of what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.